It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
From the Fox News Radio studios in New York City, giving you opinions and facts with a positive approach. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Yeah, I do feel cheerful. Always when I'm doing radio, feel cheerful. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Hope you had a sensational weekend. I am on the road, but I did not want to miss the show. So I was there kind enough in Boston to let me come out of the Odyssey Studios. And it's a beautiful setup here. So happy to be coming with you, coming to you from New England, where there's a lot more Fox fans than I ever dreamed imaginable. Congressman Kevin Brady's coming up in 10 minutes. Got to get into dollars and cents with him. A little bit of inflation, which by almost every stat and poll is your number one concern. And then Michael Waltz will go inside the war and somewhat of a war in the Republican Party. And how much is on the line for Donald Trump over the next few weeks? Because he endorsed so many candidates, many of which were underdogs. And if they get close, does that look for Donald Trump? If they were leading and they lose, does that look bad for Donald Trump? How will they affect whether he runs or not? So let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
Our border is not open. Individuals are either expelled under the Title 42 authority, or they are placed in immigration enforcement proceedings, and they are removed if they do not have a valid claim under our law to remain.
Okay.
So
you know,
the border is not open.
I can't take it. I interrupted my own soundbite. Of course the border's open. And you know what they do? They give them a cell phone and say, you better not take off the tracker and show up when we tell you to. Nice enforcement. The border bungle. Biden broke it. Mayorkas lied about it. And much to the Dem chagrin, Americans care a whole lot about it, especially because it's going to get a whole lot worse.
Number two.
Well, this is a major wake-up call for Democrats when it comes to the Latino vote. As a new poll is revealing, 52% of them say that they would back Republicans in the midterm elections.
Yeah, thank you, Ainsley, for that. Things are changing. Voters are moving towards Republicans. Polls show remarkable gains with over 45-year-olds and Hispanics, as Ainsley mentioned, and a welcome loss of big business by the Republicans as more of these big businesses like Disney go woke and Republicans walk. But can that hurt them long term?
Number one.
Today, we finally managed to start the evacuation of people from Azovstal. For the first time, there were 2 days of real ceasefire. More than 100 civilians have already been evacuated, women and children, first of all.
Wow, wearing them down. That's the goal of both Ukrainians and Russians in their barbaric war, now in day 65. Let me update you. First off, I salute Nancy Pelosi and the Democratic coalition that went over there. Not easy to be 78 years old as we start talking here and go into a war zone. She did it. We can gradually lose the music now that I'm talking in real life. So she goes over there and pledges support. Good. Demonstrated a mark. She mentioned that the U.S. support is going to be long term. I think good. This is something I think both sides agree on. I just saw a poll flash out from The Washington Post that 36% of you say give more aid. 35% say we're giving just the right amount. Very few say ignore it. Here's more from President Zelensky. Cut one.
Today, we finally managed to start the evacuation of people from Azovstal after many weeks of negotiations, after many attempts, different meetings, calls, and proposals. For the first time, there were 2 days of real ceasefire. More than 100 civilians have already been evacuated, women and children, first of all.
I love that, but it does make me somewhat sad. I want all the civilians out. But when you give up Mariupol, they're already setting up a provisional government. They're already only accepting rubles. They're opening up supermarkets, Russian stock supermarkets. And they're doing the same thing in Kherson. They're just saying, OK, I'm in charge. We'll take over. This is the Russian Republic and we're expanding. That stuff, because they don't care about human life and they don't care about who they kill, That could be a problem. In the Donbas area, even the Ukrainians say they are flooding with even more troops, but there's no coordination. There's still, even though it's so close to Mother Russia, they're still having trouble getting supplies, which shows how unorganized they are. Vladimir Putin, over the weekend, this is a story we're looking for confirmation, to undergo counter operation and hand over power to a hardline ex-spy chief. So this guy, his name is just some KGB guy. All you need to know is, can't be worse than Putin. Let's hope he dies. The guy's got cancer. He's been traveling around with a cancer doctor. He looks terrible. On their Orthodox Easter Sunday, he couldn't even stand. We see him gripping the bottom of a table. We see people meeting with him 16 to 25 feet away. So there's a sign that this guy's hopefully very sick. And my sense is there's not a lot of Vladimir Putins. There used to be a Politburo. You used to get policy. That's not... The Brezhnev way of doing things is gone. Not that that was ever heaven. That was in the midst of a Cold War. I understand it. But this is more like Stalin. My hope. So, as you mentioned, the good news is there's evacuations underway. There's also rumors, and most of them prove true. The Ukrainians took out two ships using some of these suicide drones. That would be great news. There's also rumors of them blowing up some weapons depots in Russia. That would be even better news. I'll talk about that in detail with Michael Waltz, who's on the ground, former Army Ranger. Russia has an advantage in the Donbas region because it's smaller and they were there already. But the Ukrainians still are not allowing the Russians to surround them. So every time Russia goes to do that, they poke through. And every time they try to dominate a city like Kharkiv, again, they lost. So they're beginning to pull back there. So I don't know how they get out of this. It's costing us another $33 billion. They'll vote on it again today, and I hope it gets green-lighted. But the Russians have made a terrible play in denying Bulgaria, Poland, gas and oil. And now Germany, say, pay me in rubles or don't get it at all. And the rest of Europe, there's a rapid push to go to Turkey, go through Turkey, go to the Mediterranean, go get natural gas from United Arab Emirates. And there's places in Africa that would be great customers. There's a pipeline that's almost done. And it looks as though the Germans are getting down to a point where they're going to suffer. There's going to be a possible recession. But in the end, they're going to be much more secure because they're going to not have to depend on Russian oil and gas. Here's Bob Menendez. Cut three.
Economists predict that the Russian economy, GDP, will contract by 15%. That wipes out 15 years of gain for Russia. Even Russian economists say that it will have 10% of GDP loss. That's a huge blow to Russia. Europe's latest effort that they hopefully will consolidate this week of having a oil and gas embargo against Russia will be a huge blow. And so as someone who has been the author of many sanctions, it has a tail to it. It takes some time to have an effect, but it is having an effect. And I think what's having even a bigger effect is the West's commitment to Ukraine. This is a test for the West, whether or not we will allow a country, in this case Russia, led by Putin, to ultimately violate the international order and erase the boundaries of a country by force.
I just don't understand what Russia is thinking. This is the only thing they have to finance their war and to feed their people. And yes, they have Europe over a barrel to a degree. But look what Italy has done. Italy is actually opening up deals now with Algeria and other African nations and Azerbaijan to get natural gas. The plan will be to take some time to ramp up, but the country would be the least vulnerable in the short term to Russia, but in the long term, not at all. Instead of buying oil and natural gas from Russia, where production costs are very low and the pipeline transportation is cheap, Europe must now turn to the immediate term to more expensive alternative places, like, get this, the United States, which until 7 years ago had no gas facilities at all. Remember what Robert O'Brien told us. Robert O'Brien said they had a deal to put a pipeline right into Portugal of natural gas that would fly right through all of Europe. They had an environmental issue with the French in the Pyrenees Mountains. We think that is evaporated. So if there is a will, natural gas burns clean. We could be their number one supplier. There'll be some heartache. There'll be some high gas prices. You probably can't use air conditioning the way you would like to, like, for example, California's experiencing right now. But if in the long term, civilians live and your security is enhanced because you don't have to depend on an evil renegade nation, doesn't this work for you? Yes. Explain that to your people. So Italy's on the fast course. They're going to Angola, Nigeria, Republic of Congo. Evidently, there's some natural resources there we can develop. And if we can talk to Saudi Arabia, they could help in the near term. Listen, that was just one part of what we're going to be talking about. When we come back, what's going on with inflation? What is the best way to get it back? Why is Nancy Pelosi still talking about Build Back Better? Nuts. Another $4 trillion spent. Crazy. They were kidding about it over the weekend at the White House Correspondents' Dinner. No joke when Kevin Brady joined us. Then after that, Michael Walt. You're listening to The Brian Kilmeade Show on the road in beautiful Boston. Back in a moment.
Expanding your knowledge base. It's The Brian Kilmeade Show.
This is Jimmy Failla, inviting you to join me for Fox Across America, where we'll discuss every single one of the Democrats' dumb ideas. Just kidding. It's only a three-hour show. Listen live at noon Eastern or get the podcast at foxacrossamerica.com.
A talk show that's real. This is The Brian Kilmeade Show.
I was an immigrant rights activist for 20 years before coming to Congress, and I have consistently seen these, you know, xenophobic attacks by immigrants, by Republicans on immigrants. The Republicans have no interest in fixing the broken immigration system, which is actually the issue that we need to address if we want to have an orderly process. What happened when Trump put in place Title 42, it is a public health law that never should have been put in place because it actually has to do with the introduction of a communicable disease. And at the time that it was put into place, COVID was already here. And
you know, this is when you feel bad for Joe Biden, because this is the type of idiocy he has to deal with. My question is, does he know how idiotic her statement is? Title 42 in the middle of a pandemic, because it was here already, we should let all of Central and South America and Africa and Europe in? Does that make any sense to you? Well, we're keeping kids out of school. So she didn't even want it in to begin with, let alone have it go away in 2 weeks. Joining me now is Kevin Brady. Kevin, the congressman from Texas, and it looks like Morgan Luttrell is the favorite to take your spot in your district. But no, when I hear this, no wonder you're getting out, Kevin.
I'll tell you what, that woman was clueless.
She's a power broker on the left.
Oh, my God. Well, look, it made perfect sense to impose Title 42. And by the way, the American public still believes it makes perfect sense to keep that in place. But the fact of the matter is, this administration, as you know, manipulates this public health emergency to their aims, no matter what it is. Truth of the matter, they want an open border. They want this chaos. They want this dangerous, frankly, environment in states like Texas, and it's just sad to see to hear comments like that. But I tell you, we are – look, if this thing ends on May 23rd, states like ours, and I would argue the whole country, is going to be just crushed by this surge of migrants and what it brings, from fentanyl to sex trafficking to drugs – to all of this. And so,
but Congressman, how do you explain the 42 Democrats that have signed a petition, a letter to the president, say, leave it in place, from Mark Kelly to Senator Hassan, Henry Cuellar's for real, I get it. But yeah, what do you think? Are they just playing a game for their own political welfare, or do you think they understand that this is a problem?
I think the problem, Brian, has gotten so huge and so that you can't ignore it, that it is driving their constituents to demand that stay in place. And they're going to get a chance. We're going to find out. You asked a great question. Are they real? So we're going to find that out here, because my guess is Senator Schumer this week or next is going to try to put that Ukrainian aid bill on the COVID bill and nothing to do with Title 42, and just dare Senate to vote against it. And my guess is Republicans are going to hold tight on this. The question is, will some of those Democrats who've raised these issues and signed those letters, will they join us?
So in Texas, Governor Abbott announced the launch since the Operation Lone Star that you guys caught 239,000 migrants.
Yeah.
And you've spent almost $37 million. You've actually taken $37 million of currency out of drug charges, you know, this drug trafficking money, and 342 million lethal doses of fentanyl. My question is, Texas is writing this check for something the federal government should be doing. Now, I know you guys supplementing is okay. It's a border state. I'm sure Arizona does it to a degree, and New Mexico and California to a degree. But if there's ever something ripe for a lawsuit when states are suing the federal government, shouldn't this be it?
It should. And Texas, by the way, is spending billions and billions of dollars to try to secure the border when this president won't. In fact, Governor Abbott and our leaders, Lieutenant Governor Patrick and Speaker Field, you know, they're adding another $500 million to keep Operation Lone Star going, because we have to, and especially in face of ending Title 42, you know, we've got to do everything we can. The government, Congress owes Texas the money for, in Arizona, any other border state, for doing the job that Biden simply won't do. And it's a huge amount of money, Brian, but we've got to do it. We've got to do it.
So if, Kevin, you and Ways and Means right now, and there was a Republican president, and you see inflation at 8.5%, wages around 5%, what would be the first thing that you would recommend they do?
Yeah, stop making it worse. You know, stop the spending and get all those COVID-era programs on spending out of the budget. Secondly, get workers back to the work. Right now, we still, you know, I know President Biden denies it. We still have incentives to keep people home rather than reconnecting work. That is really key to inflation. Another thing I would do, I would lower taxes. And here's why. Right now, other countries around the world are lowering their taxes to fight inflation. We're the only country under President Biden that's proposing to raise those taxes on families, on small businesses, even on corporations that are trying to invest in their supply chain. These guys want to hammer them. And as you know, in this economy, you raise the prices on business, you raise prices on consumers. It is exactly the same thing. So they're driving inflation up at a time we ought to be lowering the cost of doing business in America. So it is, you know, economically, they're just clueless, like they are on the border. But the problem is, look, we saw, it was shocking, Brian, to have the economy shrink, you know, last quarter. And there's a chance it'll shrink again next quarter. The question isn't, are we headed to a recession? The only argument is, when does it happen? And it's all fueled by President Biden's spending and policies. You know, just it's driven inflation up in a major way.
Real quick, the Democrats were warned by their chief pollster that they're losing faith with the American people on the border, crime, and inflation. So they know what their new strategy is? Bring up Donald Trump and say how much better we are off without Donald Trump's policies. Do you welcome that argument?
You know, yeah, bring it on, because the American people know differently. It is miserable for folks. You know, for families, they're spending $5,000 more to break even. Their neighborhoods aren't safe. It's to fund and now disarm the police stuff, the border issues and all. Look, they've lost faith in President Biden's leadership of this country. And I know the Democrats want to keep focusing on Trump, but he's not on the ballot.
I know. Barack Obama essentially got reelected by saying Mitt Romney's the worst person on the planet. Looks like they're going to tap back into that strategy. Hopefully Republicans are smart enough to have a counterargument. Kevin Brady, thanks so much.
A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
We see that the Biden administration continually announced laundry lists full of weapons. There was another one that the president announced on Thursday. A lot of the weapons don't arrive. They're not the weapons that Zelensky seems to need. And, you know, we're at a pivotal time right now. The Russians are redoubling their efforts to try to take areas of eastern Ukraine, possibly extend their reach to Odessa, maybe move into Moldova. This is a time when we have to get Ukraine as many weapons as possible to stop this onslaught.
Yeah, that is Fred Feitz, knows what he's doing. Key aide for years to John Bolton, Of course, he worked with the Trump administration, and Fred Feitz is just a real good guy when it comes to military things and also understanding who these leaders are. A couple of things are going on. Russians are actually running, according to reports, running out of precision weapons, which is good and bad. You run out of precision weapons, you start using what they call dumb bombs, just dropping in a vicinity, which is a waste of money, time, but it also just, I'm not saying they don't intend sometime to kill civilians, but now it's virtually guaranteed. So the Ukrainians are penetrating into the Russian border area. They're starting to blow up depot areas. The Russians are not having the success. They're behind even their Donbas operation, but they are doing damage. Imagine just saying, I can't take over this club, but I'm going to go in the club and I'm just going to wreck the place. And you still have the lease and you still have your staff. And you look around and go, this place is destroyed. And that's why Zelensky is the perfect guy with the perfect face to say, I have to have that aid coming in. I have to have those weapons coming in. And he, with his charisma and with his charisma that he's been able to do and the way he's been pushing back against Russia and the way his people have been fighting has been the best postcard for that. Michael Waltz is with us now. Yes. Congressman, welcome back.
Yeah. Hey, Brian. Good to be with you.
So looking in this area, first off, on something you don't know directly, but you might know indirectly, are we to believe this story about Vladimir Putin having cancer surgery?
I don't believe anything coming out of the Kremlin. I'm looking forward to actually getting the reporting and the intelligence of what we know. But I wouldn't take anything at face value, Brian.
All right. Here is Nancy Pelosi in Kyiv yesterday. Cut to.
Do not be bullied by bullies. If they're making threats, you cannot back down. That's my view of it, that you we're there for the fight, and you cannot fold to a bully.
And that is Nancy Pelosi. She's not speaking from Kyiv. She was speaking from Poland there, but she did get to the war-torn capital. I give her great credit for this, don't you?
Yeah, look, I give her credit for going. I think it, frankly, was really a shame that the Secretary of Defense, Austin, and the Secretary of State kind of snuck in and snuck out in the middle of the night. We need to have our senior officials there standing with Zelensky and with Ukraine and making that known. I think our embassy should have already been reopened there. The United Kingdom is doing it, and of course we're following along like the administration has done since the beginning of this thing. But I would have loved to have been standing in the audience, Brian, and asked Speaker Pelosi, where was she in such a forceful way before the war?
I
when
hear you.
So many of us were demanding that the sanctions be in place beforehand, that the weapons that the Ukrainians were begging for be provided back then.
So the Russian Defense Ministry said on Sunday that it struck 800 targets across Ukraine, including a hangar in the port city of Odessa that was said to be storing yep. weapons and ammunition delivered to Ukraine by the United States. What do you know?
Well, that wouldn't surprise me. We know the Russians have been increasingly trying to target the aid deliveries coming in. It's going to get very interesting if they start going over the border. Right. That's when we have an escalation with NATO. So we'll see. Again, that was according to the Russian Defense Ministry. I believe it about as far as I can throw it. And when I can get to D.C. and actually get the reporting, I'll loop back around with you.
Congressman Mike Waltz with us. Congressman, okay. The other thing the Russians are doing is taking Mariupol and they're saying, okay, rubles is now the currency. The supermarket's going to be Russian. I am now in charge. We're going to get that Ukrainian yep. flag down. Same thing with Kyrgyzstan. What's the
That's
significance
right.
of that?
Well, they're essentially trying to do to that land bridge area and the area that they've expanded out of Crimea with what they've done with Luhansk and Donbass since 2014. Just absolve it. This is step one of absolving that area into Russia. It's just a shame to watch this unfold in real time. What the Russians are going to continue to do is just take bite out or bite after bite. And if our goal is just to get Zelensky back to the negotiating table, if our goal is to essentially give him enough to play to a tie, Putin will take as much as he can, consolidate, absorb it into Russia, lick his wounds over the next 4 to 5 years and be right back at it in the future. We have to give Zelensky everything he needs to win, and we can't be afraid to help him drive Russia out of Ukraine. That means helping Ukrainians go on offense. And that's why you're seeing so much nuclear saber rattling from Putin, because he wants to deter us from doing that. The other piece, Brian, is we've got to get serious about the sanctions. I'm sick and tired of the administration patting themselves on the back for this unified response against Russia. The only people that are unified are the United States and Europe. But China, India, Brazil, South Africa, most of the Middle East are all still doing business with Russia. That's why the ruble has recovered. That's why their economy is still going. And meanwhile, to the extent we have sanctions in place with Europe, there's back doors and there's exemptions for energy and for Russian gas where they're bringing in billions per week. So I think the administration is way overselling the effect of these sanctions, because there are enough holes in them. It looks like Swiss cheese.
But Congressman, why don't you guys draw up something tighter and submit it and show them exactly what to do and let them turn it around? Because the American people are behind. 36% said they're in for more weapons. 35% say they fully support arming Ukraine. Very few are against it. This is an opportunity now to say, this is what we're doing. Yeah. This is what we could do.
Brian, to answer your question very directly, the reason we don't is Nancy Pelosi's in charge of the House of Representatives. So that's why I go back to, I wish I were standing there to ask her, why wasn't she so tough beforehand? And where's this tough talk when it comes to the sanctions?
Couldn't you present it and just say this is the Republican sanction idea?
Yes, we could. But to get to the floor for a vote, it takes her to agree.
Okay. I want to bring it to you something else has happened. Do you know strategy? Why would Vladimir Putin be telling Europe, pay me in rubles so you don't get oil and gas, and cut off Bulgaria and Poland? Because this is forcing them to do what we've been asking them to do for 50 years and stop with this alliance on reliance on energy in Russia. So Germany has shrunk their use of Russian oil and gas down to 35%. You have Italy scrambling over to Algeria, Azerbaijan, the Congo, and others for natural gas, Nigeria as well. So this could be a long-term great play for Europe, great play for us,
yep.
Terrible play for Putin. I mean, what is he thinking? This is what's fueling his war machine. What am I missing?
Well, I don't think you're missing anything, Brian, and I think you make some great points in that at the end of the day, you know, the thing that has me so upset is that we're looking to replace that oil and gas. Remember, Biden was over there talking about a strategy to replace it. Well, he's going to replace it with Qatar, and he's going to replace it with Maduro. And if you don't think those things are underway, right. You know, we're kidding ourselves. But, hey Brian, unfortunately, I've got to get on a plane, buddy.
Okay. Yeah, I know the feeling.
It's absolutely wonderful talking to you.
All right. Go get him, Congressman. I'll see you in Florida or D.C. or New York. Talk to you soon. All right. 1-866-408-7669. I do want to play. He's got it. And I've had this happen before because I've been getting on planes nonstop for the past 4 weeks. You just got to get off when you got to get off, because you got to get on the plane, or the plane's got to take off and you're still on the phone. And the guy next to you is like, why the hell don't you shut up? I get it. Real quick, I want you to hear more from just a little bit on the war situation. This is what Fred Feit said earlier on. Should we send more weapons? He also talked about if the violence goes down, Russia loses. Cut five.
I don't think there's going to be a peace deal. I think with Putin being portrayed as a war criminal, that's not going to happen. But I think we can hope for a cessation of hostilities if Russia's losses reach a certain level. I don't know how we will sustain that, but I think we need to work towards an end of the conflict, which means Russia has to suffer substantial losses right now.
Right. And evidently, if their economy shrinks like they say it is shrinking, if they have really lost 20 to 25,000 soldiers, let alone how many have been wounded, and he is dealing with cancer surgery and has very little support around him, and the oligarchs are being suffocated, their yachts being dispossessed, repossessed, and sold off, and a lot of their holdings, read about what's happening to them, maybe that could be the case. But my thing is, as what Mike Waltz just said, if we stop it now and they're able to absorb a part of Ukraine, which is the natural, and there's tons of coal, iron, and oil in that region. He'll spin this off as a win, and he'll be back in 5 to 7 years. And then we're going to be saying, why did we let him off the mat? That's the problem. 1-866-408-7669. I'll be able to take calls for the first time next. It's Brian Kilmeade, The Brian Kilmeade Show. Hope you had a great weekend, and so glad you're here.
Learning something new every day on The Brian Kilmeade Show. The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
As you all know, President Biden's lack of a filter does get him into hot water sometimes. You know, last month he caused a huge international incident saying that Vladimir Putin should be removed from power. It was very, very upsetting to Russia. Yeah, until someone explained to them that none of the stuff Biden wants actually gets done.
Yeah, I thought he was great. I did. Out of all the comedians that I've seen that I remember, I wasn't there. We had a show to do Saturday, One Nation, thanks for watching. And then afterwards, I watched a lot of it. And he was good. I thought he was really good. And it was conversational. It wasn't set up joke. I thought it was really good. Some of the stuff didn't work, but I mean, to do that job is almost impossible. I thought his remarks at the end were not sanctimonious. They weren't scolding. I thought they were accurate. And I think that backs up my thought that this whole Ukrainian operation, this whole war that we're seeing, that people just want to fight for freedom as imperfect as their democracy is, and people are talking about the factions and people being paid off, I get it. But it's that transition from the oppressive being a vassal state to Russia since the 90s and the constant disruption from Russia, who's jealous of their look of their purview to the West. I think that's making people turn around and go, okay, you know what? Maybe we're taking a lot for granted here. I thought his remarks at the end were good. You want to hear some more funny stuff? That was his remark about Vladimir Putin. How about this about Barack Obama's reference? Cut 25.
Mr. President, thank you for being here. Thank you for having me here. You know, I was a little confused about why me, but then I was told that you get your highest approval ratings when a biracial African guy is standing next to you. So,
funny, right? I thought it was funny. How about this? Cut 27.
MSNBC. Can I just say you guys are doing great work? You know, I love watching your shows. You know, when Trump was in office, your shows were all about how bad he was. And now that Biden's in office, your show is all about how bad Trump was. Consistency is important. We appreciate that. We really do.
Pretty accurate. Marty, you're listening on the Fox News Radio app. Hey, Marty.
Hey, Brian. Good to talk to you. I wanted to weigh in on this Ministry of Disinformation that the Biden administration has set up. I think what it really is a very clever scheme so that now they can use tax dollars to actually campaign to these groups that they feel they're in trouble with, the African American and the Spanish or the Mexican groups that they're starting to hemorrhage support from. So they figured out how to use tax dollars to do their campaigning.
Can you expand on that? I don't think I follow you.
Well, they said this Ministry of Disinformation is going to be used to combat disinformation to these particular groups. Is that not right? So they're going to be, this Ministry of Disinformation is going to have a budget that they can use to send out information to people to combat what they see as disinformation, which, of course, will be anything that isn't support the Democrat point of view, right?
Yeah, I mean, that would be so flagrant, it would blow up in their face. And by the way, the minority portions of our country, not that they have one person speaking for them when it comes to Hispanic, Blacks, Asians, but I think they don't want to be pandered to. And if you're going to be saying we're going to shield you from this information as if they're their parent, it doesn't go well. And do you see how he's hemorrhaging Hispanic votes? Do you know 52% surveyed in the Washington Post poll, 52% said they're more likely to vote for a Republican, 39% than a Democrat? If you ever want to see Democrats crack down on the border, maybe now we'll do it when they realize the new voters coming, the people sneaking in will eventually be voting Republican. So about disinformation, I should bring that up. So Secretary Mayorkas tried to do some damage control after his hideous hearings, where he has nothing to defend except for the terrible job he's doing for and the lack of policies Joe Biden is putting out. Here's what Secretary Mayorkas said about his disinformation board. Cut 17.
There's no question, Brett, that we could have done a better job in communicating what it does. We address disinformation that presents a security threat to the homeland. Disinformation from Russia, from China, from Iran, from the cartels. Our work does not infringe on free speech.
Okay, so
does not infringe on civil rights, civil liberties. It's not about speech.
Well,
it's about the connectivity to violence.
I mean, that should be the State Department. He's describing attacks from the outside to the inside. Homeland Security is the Hunter Biden laptop. That is outside, so you're going to make sure that that is sidelined again? The next Joe Biden scandal, the next Barack Obama, Nancy Pelosi, Susan Rice scandal? Could it be Russian disinformation? Will it take another 2 years of examination for you to realize it wasn't? And I'm just wondering, does this play into this? You remember Barack Obama gave that speech at Stanford a few days ago. Cut 20.
Now, the good news is that almost all the big tech platforms now acknowledge some responsibility for content on their platforms, and they're investing in large teams of people to monitor it. Given the sheer volume of content, this strategy can feel like a game of whack-a-mole. While content moderation can limit the distribution of clearly dangerous content, it doesn't go far enough. But I also think decisions like this shouldn't be left solely to private interest. These decisions affect all of us. And just like every other industry that has a big impact in our society, that means these big platforms need to be subject to some level of public oversight and regulation.
Coincidence? That's the topic that Mayorkas happens to sneak out during testimony. A week earlier, Barack Obama at Stanford gives that speech about disinformation. Are they all linked? Quite possibly. Look, there is a problem on social media. I don't know if I want Barack Obama and Secretary Mayorkas to fix it.
Live from the Fox News radio studios in New York City, fresh off the set of Fox and Friends, it's America's receptive voice, Brian Kilmeade.
Thanks so much for being here, everybody. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show coming to you, well, today from Boston, but located at 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan, heard around the country, heard around the world. Hope you had a great weekend. For most of you listening, I think the weather was great. It actually felt like April for a change, so we were able to get outside. So hopefully that'll happen. I just read that Oprah was inside for over 360 days during the pandemic. Oprah, she's so scared about. Let me see. Senator Bill Hagerty is standing by, and Brett Vilikovich, fresh off a trip to Ukraine again, where he was on the ground for 6 weeks. What he knows you can't get out of a printer, you can't get out of a report, what he's seen in terms of the fighting and the equipment and what's getting there and what's not. Brett Vilikovich will be joining us shortly. So let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
Our border is not open. Individuals are either expelled under the Title 42 authority, or they are placed in immigration enforcement proceedings, and they are removed if they do not have a valid claim under our law to remain. So the border is not open.
They're removed, or they get to stay here with the cell phone that we gave them, with clothes that we issue them, with a bus ride where we bring them wherever they want, or a plane ride in the middle of the night. The border bungle. Biden broke the border. Mayorkas lied about it. And much to the Dem chagrin, Americans care about it, especially because it's about to get worse.
Number two.
Well, this is a major wake-up call for Democrats when it comes to the Latino vote. As a new poll is revealing, 52% of them say that they would back Republicans in the midterm elections.
Wow. Things are changing. Voters are moving towards Republicans in many ways. Polls show remarkable gains with over 45-year-olds and Hispanics, and a welcome loss of big business, according to some, of the Republicans, losing the big business as a client, I guess, as they go too woke. Case in point, Disney. Republicans walk away. It may seem good now, but is that a good long-term strategy?
Number one.
Today, we finally managed to start the evacuation of people from Azovstal. For the first time, there were 2 days of real ceasefire. More than 100 civilians have already been evacuated, women and children, first of all.
Yeah, that is a translator, obviously, President Zelensky, wearing them down. That's the goal of both Ukrainians and Russians in this barbaric war now in day 65, which we are very much in support. Nancy Pelosi took some courage, went there and visited again, took the train, came in and left, and then went to Poland and made a speech. Special thanks to Hot Talk 95.5 WRNN of Myrtle Beach. We really appreciate you adding us. We appreciate you adding us to your schedule. I hope you enjoy the ride. We certainly are thrilled to be there. We get a lot of calls from South Carolina. All right, let's bring in Senator Bill Hagerty. Senator Hagerty, welcome back.
Great to be with you, Brian.
First thing first, just on the war, $33 billion is going to be offered. That's what the administration wants. Are you going to look to green light that?
Well, I'm going to look to understand exactly what they plan to do with it. You know, they're very, very quick to come and offer huge numbers and suggest that we should vote in the middle of the night over things without producing a timeline and what exact results they hope to get with it. So until I understand, you know, what we're going to get for this, what the American taxpayer is going to get for this, and what result is going to yield in terms of delivering victory for the Ukrainians, and I'm going to have to take a very hard look at this before I can move forward.
I understand they want to link COVID aid with the Ukrainian aid.
I think they'll try any ploy they can to try to achieve victory on the COVID front. What they are concerned about, though, is that Republicans are going to come back and say that Title 42 has got to be reinstated or continued. And we've got a pretty significant amount of Democrat support that's coming forward as well on that. Title 42 meaning the last tool left in the hands of our Customs and Border Patrol agents to keep people from entering this country just completely wholesale.
Here's what Senator Tim Kaine, obviously a Democrat, said about that. The Democrats, he seems to be one of them, said, wait, you're going to end it and you have no plan to handle 18,000 that you projected are going to surge the border? We're already overwhelmed by 7,000? Cut 16.
Title 42 needs to expire. It's an emergency regulation, and it needs to be replaced by more permanent procedures and plans to do a better job at the border. And so I was confused about the timing. We were going to have Title 42 expire on May 23, mm-hmm. and then have new asylum and border rules go into place May 31. I was just confused with the administration's messaging about this.
Yeah, and that was a nice way of saying it's my own party. I don't want to blow them up, but yeah. What are you thinking?
Well, it's unbelievable. I led a delegation down to our southern border the early part of April, Brian, and it's just a travesty what's happening there. You would not believe the human misery that's occurring in our border right now. The Mexican drug cartels have complete control of Mexico's northern border at this point. They're working in harmony with the Chinese Communist Party. They're bringing fentanyl and its precursors over and working together in tandem to produce more deadly drugs that they're flooding across this border and killing Americans. We have more people dying in my home state of Tennessee this month than we did last month, and that has been the case ever since Joe Biden took office. What they've done is they've turned every town into a border town. And what Senator Kaine is saying is, right, there needs to be a plan. Well, I can tell you there's already an obvious answer. That's put in place the migrant protection protocols, the so-called stay in Mexico policy that President Trump negotiated, very hard fought. It took a long time to put that in place, and it was working. You've got to remove the incentive for people to come to the United States. When you force them to stay in their own country or in a third country while they seek asylum and you stop catch and release, you bring the flow of illegal immigration to a trickle.
Well, put it this way. You know, you have a socialist leader of Mexico who the president Trump at the time said this has got to stop. He had a series of meetings. They put Marines on their southern border. Remain in Mexico was put in place. And so good was their relationship at the end. It was the Mexican leader was probably the last ally of ours to acknowledge that Joe Biden won the election. And he said that Donald Trump has always been fair and honest with us. We'd never had relations with Mexico like that. So whatever we would do with the Remain in Mexico, now that we understand there's 150,000 would-be illegal immigrants waiting to come, they do not want to do what a judge told them to do, and that is to reinstall the Remain in Mexico policy. But they're doing it reluctantly, haphazardly. But my fear is with that telecall that they had last week, that Joe Biden will muddle his way to get rid of it.
Yeah, I'm very fearful of the same thing. You know, just as you said, Brian, the Biden administration has been delivered a court order to reinstate the migrant protection protocols to force these people to apply for asylum in their home country. To stop this, they will not execute it. This is a lawless administration, and they have no oversight because the Democrats have control of both the House and the Senate. I do believe that'll change in November. But in the meantime, we're going to see an avalanche of human misery across that border on the 23rd of May if Biden continues with his plan to lift Title 42 again, which is the last thread of ammunition that our Border Patrol agents had to stop this massive flow. When I was down there, though, I heard the clip from Secretary Mayorkas saying that the border is closed. That is not true at all. We saw people flooding across the border. All they do is they turn themselves in. We saw a group of people coming from Cuba. They came and asked us, where's the Border Patrol agent? Why is that? Because that's step one to get their free ticket and cell phone to move on into the United States. It's shocking that Mayorkas would have the gall to say what he said.
And by the way, for people to say that it's not going to be a big deal, the Honduran foreign minister came to Washington and told Fox that they expect a massive influx of illegal immigrants into our country from Honduras. So they're telling us this is going to happen. They can't do anything to stop it. We have to threaten them by retaking aid back. And when we give them aid, we got to make sure it gets to the right people, not in the pockets of these leaders. This is stuff that we've been over for 20 years. But it doesn't seem, it seems like Joe Biden is surprised that we even have a border.
Well, he certainly hasn't gone down there. You know, I know that Nancy Pelosi led a big delegation to the Ukraine. What I'd like to do is see her take a delegation down to our southern border. But there hasn't been a senator from the Democrat side or a leader from the House, or certainly not President Biden, go to our southern border. They're ignoring it. They're hoping the media will ignore it. But it is a travesty. And if you think about the national security consequences of this, Brian, when I was there at the border, the Border Patrol agents told me that since Biden took office, they have apprehended 157 different nationalities. Then I got a report about 3 weeks later. It's up to 166 different nations' citizens have been apprehended at that southern border. Who knows who's gotten away? This is a crisis of national security, a national security crisis that Biden has precipitated as well. And our neighboring countries don't like this at all.
So there's a new poll out of the Washington Post, ABC poll. 52% of Latino voters said they would choose a Republican compared to 39% for Democrats. Democrats also trail in voters under 45, with 50% saying they would choose a Republican compared to 40% who said they plan to vote for a Democrat. But when it comes to the generic ballot on Congress, it looks like the Democrats have a 1 or 2 point advantage over you guys. Does that concern you?
Well, I think the Hispanic voters here in America are going to continue to move our way because anybody that lives here in America properly, that got here legally, respects our nation. I think wants to see our nation remain strong. What they're witnessing happen at our southern border, I'm sure, is discouraging them to an incredible measure. The Democrats have always tried to hold them out as, hold themselves out as the party that's going to be representing the Hispanic population. That's just not true from a value standpoint, from a principle standpoint, from preserving the American way. That's not the case. In fact, many of these people who have migrated legally came from countries that do have socialism. They know what failed policies the Democrats are pursuing right now, and they're going to continue to move in favor of Republicans. I'm certain of it.
Well, I guess we'll have to see. It's going to be a lot to do with the next 6-7 months. When Senator Kelly, when Senator Hassan and others come down and say, I'm concerned about the border. Senator Hassan of New Hampshire did a ad in front of the border wall saying we got to reinforce our border. These are Democrats. Are they sincere? I mean, there's up to 42 of them assigned a letter saying they're concerned about Title 42 and what's happening at the border. What do you think is really happening there? A guy like Henry Cuellar, we know he feels this. We know he believes it.
Yeah.
What about the others?
Yeah, he lives it. Yeah. I think the others are reading the polls, Brian, and they realize that they are going to be gone in November. So they're moving away from the Democrat Party far left position of just massive illegal immigration. No borders. This is not what the American public wants. This is not what voters in New Hampshire, Arizona, and many other states that have Democrat senators want to see. So they're reading the polls, and they're thinking about their own survival. And if they don't wake up, and if they don't get their colleagues to actually come down and experience what I did, if they don't actually come down and see exactly what's happening. This is not about doing a photo shoot in front of a wall. This is about going down and seeing the human misery that's coming across this border. I'm talking about young children, mothers, young girls who have been in transit for months trying to get there, who have been abused severely. And those people are just being used as fodder by the cartels because they're using them to basically overwhelm the Border Patrol agents so that they can then shove the fentanyl across the border in their normal channels. It's just a disgrace.
So Trump was throwing everything at the border, firing people, and people were upset by that, threatening countries, people were upset by that. But at the end, he really got a hold of it. I went down there three times. Now they're getting 7,000 a day. Back then, I think it was 3,500. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. I was seeing Border Patrol captains and officers being forced out of their offices who are picking up migrants. While I'm doing stand-ups, they were turning themselves into, while I'm doing interviews, they were turning themselves into them. I get back to their base, and I see a bunch of guys throwing up these tents in order to put the families in. I walk inside, and that area should be holding maybe 50 people. It's holding 150 people, which look like mini prisons because we want to protect the kids from the adults. I had minor PTSD. I could not stop thinking about this scenario. And I can't believe, I can only imagine how bad it is now. Did you feel the same way? You couldn't shake
Brian,
what you saw?
Yeah, I did, Brian. And I tell you who else I feel sorry for. It's the Border Patrol agents themselves. They signed up to protect our border. They didn't sign up to be processing people as rapidly as they possibly can as they illegally come across that border. They are so demoralized. And I was actually there on the Friday night when the change of shift occurred. The night shift came on, and the leader there told the whole group in the evening muster that President Biden has determined that he's going to lift Title 42 effective May 23rd. You just could have feel the pall of discouragement and despair fall across the room, Brian. The very last tool that they have at their disposal is being taken away. As you say, those numbers are going to go from the 3,500 you saw to the 7,000 that I saw to 18,000. They're going to be completely overwhelmed. They will not be able to protect an inch of that border, and that's exactly what the cartels and the Chinese Communist Party want. There will be more death in America due to drug overdose. It's already the number one cause of death for young people between the ages of 18 and 45 in America, thanks to Joe Biden, is death by overdose, most of it fentanyl coming from China.
I'm talking to Senator Bill Hagerty of Tennessee. He's on Foreign Relations and Appropriations. But do you want to know how far off the reservation the Democrats are? Listen to what Joe Biden has to deal with. This is Congresswoman Jayapal on the same thing we're talking about. Cut 13.
I was an immigrant rights activist for 20 years before coming to Congress, and I have consistently seen these, you know, xenophobic attacks by immigrants, by Republicans on immigrants. The Republicans have no interest in fixing the broken immigration system, which is actually the issue that we need to address if we want to have an orderly process. What happened when Trump put in place Title 42? It is a public health law that never should have been put in place because it actually has to do with the introduction of a communicable disease. And at the time that it was put into place, COVID was already here.
I mean, have you heard of such idiocy?
It's unbelievable. You know, Brian, I have actually introduced legislation to expand Title 42 because if you think about the number one cause of death, again, for young people between age 18 and 45, it's drug overdose. And so we've actually put in place legislation that will expand and strengthen Title 42. If we are concerned about people coming across the border who may be trafficking in drugs that could lead to overdoses. That's a public health concern that's very real. Again, I've got to get Democrats to take this and support it, but we need to keep protections in place at that border. The migrant protection protocols are the most obvious ones. Joe Biden has walked away from that, but we should put pressure on them at every turn to bring some sort of...
Yeah. Senator Hagerty, thanks so much. Appreciate it. I understand it. I'm just going to add this. She says, well, since the pandemic was already here, why were we stopping people from coming here? Do I need to even tell you how stupid that is? When we come back, I'll take your calls, 1-866-408-7669. Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're listening. Keep it here.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
The release doesn't mean just let go into the United States. It means if we do not detain individuals, they're placed on alternatives to detention, and they are in immigration enforcement proceedings. And if they do not appear for their immigration enforcement proceedings, they are a priority for enforcement action.
So let me understand this. What he's telling you in a condescending way, that is Homeland Security Secretary Mayorkas, when you come across and you go ahead and this is my case, this is what I like to do. Okay, I'm going to process you. I'm going to give you a cell phone. I'm going to give you an ankle bracelet. I'm going to give you a desk appearance when you come back. Now, if they don't show up or they throw the cell phone away, we're going to ask ICE to go after them, really? ICE, which has been defunded and been told basically to stay behind the desk, the few people that are left there. Remember, ICE is the enemy for the way left, not for the logical left. So that's what he's saying. Before we expel you, we're going to look at your situation, get you in front of a judge. You can stay until you get there. He claims 84% show up and call in. I would love to see a second source with that because I believe nothing this guy says. Brian Kilmeade Show. When we come back, I'll be joined by Brett Velikovich. You want to know what's happening in Ukraine? Really happening? He knows. He'll share.
Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
I don't think there's going to be a peace deal. I think with Putin being portrayed as a war criminal, that's not going to happen. But I think we can hope for a cessation of hostilities if Russia's losses reach a certain level. I don't know how we will sustain that, but I think we need to work towards an end of the conflict, which means Russia has to suffer substantial losses right now.
Fred Feitz, talking practically, I hope so, and I think they are. What they acknowledge, what we heard in transmissions among Russian officers, they lost about 20,000 people, and let's say by now it's 25, let alone how many are wounded. And they're running out of precision weapons, which is good and bad, these dumb bombs that they're dropping, even though they said they hit 500 targets over the weekend, or 800 targets. Over the weekend. Joining us now is Brett Velikovich, Fox News contributor, former special operations intel analyst, and also a drone expert who just spent some quality time over in Ukraine. Brett, welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me, Brian.
Brett, what's changed since you left that you understand? Because I know your contacts are great.
Yeah, not much, to be honest. With the exception of the Russians have been focusing most of their efforts on the east and the Donbass, so they've come out of locations like Kyiv. When I would go downtown into the capital of Kyiv, it was nearly surrounded. There were only some small corridors where you could get in there to actually extract Americans, and now those Russians have left, so there are things that are being restored. Like, for instance, electricity has reportedly been restored in 409 out of the 494 regional settlements around Kyiv that were affected by Russian occupation. But at the same time, there's still a war going on, man. It's people are coming back into the country of Ukraine. It was interesting when I left. Typically, people are stuck at the border crossing going across into Poland, and now it's sort of the opposite. So refugees are coming back, but there are major battles going on every single day still in the east and in Donbass and Mykolaiv and Kherson. These are areas that are getting still hammered by Russian forces.
And I understand in Kherson they took down the internet, so they've lost all communication.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's, some other things that are going on in there as well. For instance, you've got some of these locations where Kherson is a good example. Russians have reportedly started using the ruble. They've been making the occupying officials introduce that there as well. They've been claiming that Ukraine has lost control over the Kherson region completely. You've got religious leaders and activists that are being targeted heavily. Anyone that's got connections to the government or media is being taken to Russia or at least Russian-occupied areas in Ukraine where they're being tortured. A lot of them are just disappearing. There's a lot of brutal interrogations and things that we're getting reports on from the field that are taking place there. So by no means is this war over, but at the same time, it seems like Russians are suffering tactically, absolutely, as you reported before I jumped on.
So, Brett, the kidnapping, they clarified. Mm-hmm. They said the Russians, oh, no, these people in the Ukraine are choosing to evacuate to our country. Others who are more sober say they've been moved into islands where they're being interrogated or put in forced labor or into Siberia.
No, it's disgusting. They've set up these filtration camps. A lot of people are disappearing from these locations. They're lying to them. They're not letting medical aid get in there. And they're basically telling the civilians, hey, the only way to get out is to go through Russia. And so they're basically saying, hey, we'll put you on this bus. We'll put you on this refugee bus. we'll take you to a safe area, and then they end up torturing and interrogating them when you've got on the west side, you know, of the country, or at least in locations like Mariupol, you've got buses of organizations that are just ready to bring food and bring medical aid in, and the Russians are blocking that from getting in. And it's that, you know, since they cut off all the media outlets in there, most of the local citizens, they don't know what's going on.
In terms of the actual fighting, do you feel as though those weapons are getting to the front and the front is now further away and the supply lines are more challenging, obviously, because it's moved out of the capital, right? So what are the people telling you? Are we getting the javelins there? Are we getting these suicide drones, the suicide drones to the front?
Well, I was talking today, Brian, on the network about the javelins, and there's some difficulty there. Look, the further you go east into the country, the less and less weapons there are. And that has to do with the logistical supply runs that are going, and that also has to do with, I think, a little bit of incompetence on behalf of the U.S. administration. They still have no idea where these weapons are going. It's mind-boggling to me. This is information I'm receiving from some of the highest levels of government, Brian. It's not some soldier with a chip on his shoulder griping about weapons aren't reaching the front line. This is top levels of the U.S. government dealing with lethal aid that are telling you directly they have very little insight into where these weapons are going. And it is so easy to account for these weapons if they really wanted to do it. They're coming out of Poland, they reach Ukraine, and there just seems to be a lack of capability or will to track them. And right now, this is a war logistics. We need to get these weapons to the front lines as fast as possible. And the fact that the U.S. administration doesn't want to account for this, and they're just saying, hey, there you go, Russians, or there you go, Ukraine, you know, point you in the direction of the Russians and have at it. The other thing is just javelins. Let's talk about this for a second. So we've got guys that are basically in the field, you know, using these javelins. And you got to remember, a lot of people in Ukraine, they've just become soldiers just within the last couple months. I mean, a good example is literally like a DJ that I deal with that was just a few months ago mixing beats in the capital of Kyiv is now fighting for his family on the front lines with sniper rifles. He's got javelin missiles in his trunk of his car. And you think this guy's trained on these things? No, he's not. You know, you've got thousands of these javelin missiles who have come in there to the country. They're making it, you know, in certain capacities to these guys, but then they're misfiring on the front line. These guys don't have the proper training. These simulators that I've been talking about just in the last 24 hours that the U.S. government has stopped. They've stopped these javelin missile simulators from coming into the country, which are the things that you use to train people on them. There's some political logjam for the flow of these training devices into Ukraine. And those are the things that'll help train these guys who have just been conscripted to the military and the ones that are actually defending the gates into the rest of NATO. So it's still a bit of a mess. That's for sure. I mean, again, we're only still a couple months into this war, but there are a lot of things I think that can be fixed, especially logistically, to get more weapons in and faster.
Well, number one, what would be the political logjam? Who would not want a simulator on to train Ukrainians?
Yeah, I think this has to do with that's a great question, but I think what it has to do is the fact that they're worried maybe some simulator is going to get caught in the wrong hands. But you've got thousands of javelin missiles in there. Why can't you? Guys on the ground have been trying to get two javelin simulators for months now to be brought into Ukraine before the javelin missiles arrive, and they cannot get it in. And they're being told it's being stopped at the highest levels of government for whatever reason they've come up with as to why they don't want these things in there, which makes zero sense considering you have thousands of javelin missiles in there. What's the problem? And these things are misfiring. So the control, the CPUs in them, they'll be on the front line, they'll be firing at Russians, and they'll misfire, and then you have to take these Ukrainians off the front line to get them repaired, which, by the way, there's not – you don't just take a javelin missile to a, you know, repair shop, an iPhone repair shop in the middle of Kyiv. You got to take it into Poland. So now you're taking Ukrainians who don't even want to leave a fight to another country to get these things repaired. And that part of that is not necessarily because they're faulty. It's because potentially they're not trained on them properly, and they're messing up the control systems on the inside of it. So get these simulators over there. Help me, you know, help us get these simulators over there, Ryan, because like, why, you know, you've got guys that are just became military soldiers that are being handed some highly technical equipment that in the end, they could be more effective if they were taught how to use them properly.
So a couple of things. So the Donbas region is going to be easier for the Russians to fight there, harder for the Ukrainians to fight there because it's further distance. And I understand it's a lot of open field, but isn't it also true that things are thawing? That rains will come, And those tanks are going to be forced to stay on roads or just be stuck?
So weather is about to become a major, major issue. Watch this very closely, especially with the rains in eastern Ukraine. But that is to the disadvantage of Russia more than it is Ukrainians. The Russians got these big tanks over there, and you got Ukrainians who are sort of smarter, and they're sort of like, hey, don't give me this up-armored vehicle that's going to get stuck. You know, give me a little Toyota Hilux, or let me take my own car in there, or let me take a different mechanism. And that's why Ukrainians are killing Russians 10-1 tactically. Because they're smarter about how they're moving. But the weather is a major issue, without a doubt. I think one of the other things that are going to potentially become an issue overall is the Russians have been recruiting foreign fighters from Syria now for months. And these guys have been getting trained in Belarus. They've been brought into parts of Russia. And they've been undergoing training here for the last month or so, tens of thousands of fighters. When did they start piping those guys in, if not already, into the east and potentially kind of you have this new wave of fighting? And then on top of that, you've got Victory Day. Everyone I talk to is really, really concerned about Victory Day. I think it's May 9th, if I'm not mistaken. People are worried that Russia and Putin are going to come up with something catastrophic to prove to the world that they are in charge. And what that is, we don't know, but I can tell you that people, especially in Ukraine, are preparing for this significantly.
May 9th.
I believe it's May 9th, yeah.
Yeah. So Vladimir Putin and the cancer surgery, if you look at this guy that evidently the Daily Mail is reporting, if you look at him over the last few times, he looks terrible. He doesn't even look like the same guy. I know he's doing some Botox or something, but there's something wrong with him. And I do think this is not necessarily the Russian philosophy. It might just be him and a small nucleus of people, their philosophy. What do people tell you? Because I know you're more of a war fighter than you are an intelligence operator when it comes to Russia, and they have totally sealed off their country. But does it seem real to you?
I think we have to look at his mental health. We've got to remember in the end that Putin is a KGB agent. Okay, I started out in the intelligence community very, very young, and that has guided everything I've done going forward, and that guides him as well when he thinks about that. And so mentally, he's going to want to win at any cost. And his pride is going to get in the way. His ego is going to get in the way of all that. And so people cannot underestimate him and sort of his mental health and what that will potentially do on the battlefield. And again, he's still go back, decades. He's still upset about the Cold War. So I'm really concerned about what he'll do in the future here, especially, you've got a madman that clearly is telling everyone he's going to win at any cost. And so what that means, only time will tell.
So we understand that the report goes that this other guy will take over. His name is Nikolai Petrushev, as long as he is incapacitated in surgery. And it's abdominal surgery. He's also dealing with Parkinson's. We watched the distance between him, and we almost laugh if it wasn't so serious, between him and his aides. We see him grip the table. We saw how uneasy he was at that Easter ceremony, biting his lip. And I do think in a situation like this, a lot of this comes from one guy. And for him to start denying oil and gas to his number one customer when oil and gas is his number one way to fuel his war machine, it shows somebody seemingly to me totally imbalanced.
He's completely imbalanced. Why did he even come to Ukraine in the first place? Like that, of course he's imbalanced. Like what madman does that in this day and age? And so people, you and I had talked about this before the war had gone on. We knew that this was going to happen, but a lot of people seemed to think, no, he's not crazy enough to do that. And of course he did. So how far does he take it now? Now neighboring countries are about to announce that they're going to be sending applications to NATO. It's exactly the opposite of what Putin wanted. And so what does he do when more applications in neighboring countries start going to NATO, which he feels like is already encroaching on his territory? Does he step up the level of attacks? People are very, very concerned about chemical attacks. We're getting requests for gas masks to be brought in. They want groups to bring to the Ukrainians gas masks and chemical suits. So what does that tell you about the information on the ground that's going on there about what Putin might potentially do?
And he'll alienate anybody who's on the fence, say, I'm staying out of it, from Brazil to India. When you go with chemical weapons, they're going to lose more people that might be amenable to take any of their products on the open market, from grain to oil and gas. Adding to Russia's troubles, according to the Pentagon, They're assessing that Moscow is having trouble replenishing its inventory of precision-guided munitions. The official says most of their strikes are being conducted with dumb bombs instead of precision weapons. Is that what your guys are telling you?
It's never been precise for them, and that's what I think has surprised so many people, right? I come from a military that is, there's mistakes have been made, but for the most part, we're very, very precise with our targeting from the air. Russia, on the other hand, they just level a town. They have no – and that's why it's so dangerous to be in there. It's not like some ISIS guy with a sniper rifle and or an IED, around the corner. This is – artillery starts coming in on the front lines, and you can't run fast enough to get away from it. It just levels – it levels a city block. And that kind of is part of their TTPs, to be quite honest. And I don't know if it's just that they don't have the ability to be precise or they don't care. But either way, it's incredibly dangerous because they are wiping these cities off the map. I mean, if you go into Mariupol, 90% of the entire city is just – the infrastructure is just completely damaged. I mean, the reconstruction side of this thing is going to be – going to be huge, and that's because they're not the Russians aren't being surgical in their targeting. They don't care if it's a woman, child, mother, father, Ukrainian soldier. It doesn't matter to them. They're just going to strike it and destroy it. That's part of their TPP.
Yeah, Brett, thanks so much. You're doing the hard work on a daily basis, and your message is so important. Thank you.
Thank you, Brian.
You got it. Brett Velikovich, Fox News contributor. Intelligence operator. When we come back, I'll finish up this hour with your calls, 1-866-408-7669. Happen to be in beautiful Boston, normally at 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan, Brian Kilmeade Show.
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
I'm ready because the kings of cable are set here. Fox News in the house, yeah? The top-rated news network for the past, 300 years? Killing it. And I know Fox has a bad reputation. I even feel you tense up now when I talk about them. They really do crush it. I think they get a bad rap because it's a mixed bag. They actually have really good journalists. It just depends on when you watch. All right? Fox News is sort of like a Waffle House. Yeah, it's relatively normal in the afternoon, but as soon as the sun goes down, there's a drunk lady named Janine threatening to fight every Mexican who comes in. You can't throw me out. I know the real president.
Listen, I don't think that's funny. I mean, it's funny. I mean, obviously, I don't think it goes dark. Tucker, Sean, Laura, fantastic. It's as good as primetime has ever been. People watch from all around. People that don't like them watch. They've done the impossible. Jesse also killing it at 7. So, but that's funny. You got to be able to laugh at yourself. What happens is people don't agree, and that's why they think it goes dark. I get it. I don't mean to disseminate humor, but I'm just trying to break up the difference between hate and humor. They got some good journalists. They've been killing it. Admit that that's the deal. Don't pretend that we're some marginal, crazy network that says outlandish things just for ratings. So I just thought he was good. And I am not a Trevor Noah fan. I mean, I watch The Daily Show, and I say to myself, what is happening to me in my life? There's got to be something else for me to do because there's nothing happening there. I mean, I watched him during the pandemic a couple of times. He wasn't even trying. So I don't even know why he was doing a show. I mean, his promos are terrible, too. But he nailed it. And I also walked by in Orlando with a Magic play, and it said sold out. He had sold out an arena, I think of probably, I guess if you put a stage in the middle, probably 10,000 people. So I'm in the minority there. So I thought he was good. Overall, it was the first time I saw Washington Correspondents' Dinner that I didn't go to, that I didn't want to be there. And nothing to do with the pandemic. I'm just saying to myself, if I have a day off and they don't need me to do a show, I'm not going to Washington. And most of the people I want to talk to are at work. So I don't need to meet other people. It was the first time. Usually I love going to those things, and there's always something to do and some place to go. Unless Fox is having some exclusive party, which is good. But every day is like having a party over at 1211 6th Avenue. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. BrianKilmeade.com. Get any of my books. I sign them and sell them.
Live from the Fox News Radio Studios in New York City. Fresh off the set of Fox and Friends. It's America's receptive voice. Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, thanks so much for being here, everybody. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show, 1-866-408-7669. Going to have a big hour coming your way. At the bottom of the hour, Brett Baer, always insightful. Almost as cool as my guest that's in my New York studio now, John Taffer. The man always has to be in control. In studio with his brand new book that is out, Bar Rescue. You know him as the Bar Rescue host. He's got a brand new season. He's got a great new book, The Power of Conflict. In a time in which we just decide to hold our silence, John is saying that's a huge mistake and uses his own life lessons to show it. John Taffer in a matter of moments. So let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three. Sponsored by LifeVac. Save a life in a choking emergency. Visit LifeVac.net to learn more and use code BK10 to save 10%.
Number three.
Our border is not open. Individuals are either expelled under the Title 42 authority or they are placed in immigration enforcement proceedings, and they are removed if they do not have a valid claim under our law to remain. So the border is not open.
The border bungle. Biden broke it. Mayorkas lied about it. And much to the Dem chagrin, Americans care a whole lot about what's happening there, especially because it's going to get worse.
Number two.
Well, this is a major wake-up call for Democrats when it comes to the Latino vote. As a new poll is revealing, 52% of them say that they would back Republicans in the midterm elections.
That is the great Ainsley Earhart. Things are changing. Voters are moving towards Republicans. Polls show remarkable gains with people under 45 and Hispanics. And welcome, by the way, there's something else happening. Republicans are walking away from big businesses. As they go woke, Republicans are walking. Could that hurt them long term?
Number one.
Today, we finally managed to start the evacuation of people from Azovstal. For the first time, there were 2 days of real ceasefire. More than 100 civilians have already been evacuated, women and children, first of all.
Wearing them down. That's the goal of both the Ukrainians and Russians in this barbaric war, now in day 65. The better fighters are the Ukrainians, and they're fighting for their sovereignty, which I hope results in victory. By the way, special thanks to BK. We have a brand new station, WRNN-FM, in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Hot Talk 99.5 WRNN. So we are privileged that you're now in our family of stations, and I know you're going to enjoy the ride. And what a great guest you have. John Taffer, congratulations on your latest book.
Thank you, Brian. You know a thing or two about books, don't you?
Yeah, and you know, and you. By the way, I feel these books. I can't wait to talk about them when they come out. Isn't day one, even though it comes out tomorrow, isn't day one so interesting? Because everything that you thought about, now you get to speak about this book. It goes from the library to the arena.
It's the truth. And you got to hold back as it's printing and coming together. You can't talk about it too early. So it's great to talk about them because we work so hard on these. This one took me over 2 years, Brian.
So I started reading it, and you bring up a great first confrontation to kind of characterize why the book is so important. You start Bar Rescue. You have a scene, and you want your reality shows. Your shows are real.
Yep.
The emotion's real, and the confrontation is real, and the resolve is real, if that, of course, is the case. And you had a producer walk in and go, stop it again. We need you to do this. We need you to do that. John, we need you to stand over there. And you just saw this. You were poured by it. And you basically said, you're out or I'm out. Make a choice. And you were willing to blow up the whole project because you had a vision and you were willing to have conflict to make sure your vision was saw through.
You know, Brian, you and I share something. We're both honest, and I'm not going to go on television and fake stuff. And when I did the show originally, my deal with the network is it would be real. And this one executive came in and wanted me to fake a bunch of stuff, and the show actually got shut down for a day. It was canceled for a day as all the network executives flew in, and it was a big deal. But ever since then, they allowed me to do my show honestly the way I wanted to. If it wasn't for that conflict, Brian, I probably would not be on television today. So conflict is not a bad thing. Conflict is important, and I wrote this book because in today's world, Brian, no matter what side of the political spectrum you're on, if we don't start to speak up as a society, our ideals are going to disappear. And too many people are intimidated by conflict or scared of conflict. So I wanted to put together a how-to book with toolkits and understanding how to engage in conflict, not the kind of nasty stuff online. I'm talking about dignified, purposeful conflict. You know, that brother at Thanksgiving or that boss or the conflict. Look at parents with school boards today. They have to know how to engage in conflict. So hopefully this book empowers people to stick up for what they believe in.
You know, to drill down, you like that the parents stuck up for themselves and their kids and maybe found a school board for the first time in their lives.
Absolutely.
But sometimes they hurt their message by going over the top, correct?
And getting too emotional. That's right. This is, you know, great conflict happens logically. It happens in a predetermined, almost strategic kind of way, almost like a debating team, if you will, Brian. You know who you're talking to. You know what they believe. You do your homework and you engage in something deliberate. And unfortunately, online now, none of that happens. Everything is so nasty and lacks dignity. You know, if you and I were going to negotiate something, Brian, and you knew that I was going to take your dignity away when you sat at the table, I was going to embarrass you and shame you, you wouldn't sit at the table with me. But if you knew I was going to treat you with dignity, you would. So great conflict really starts with dignity.
Couple of things. I think this stat that when it was on my Saturday show, we talked about, I believe there's a rise of the rational is happening. I'm not talking about moderates. I'm talking about rational people are coming back to America and speaking up. But this guy, one of my guests, they did an extensive study. They say two-thirds of Americans decide to self-silence rather than speak up when they disagree with someone. Two-thirds. They just don't need it.
So how do our ideals continue if two-thirds of our society doesn't stick up for those ideals? That's why I wrote the book, Brian. I wanted to empower those people. I wanted to give them the confidence and help them understand that their opinion matters. And a lot of the book talks about that your opinion matters. Don't discount yourself. And then there's the physiological part, Brian. You know, people who are submissive, who hold things in every day and never stick up for themselves, there's bad physiological effects that happen from that as well. It's not healthy.
John, it's safe to say that you don't hold anything in. That's not going to be your problem. You'll turn an ankle before you'll get an ulcer.
That's true. That's true.
I've seen you in real life and on television, which is real life. So here's the risk. People listening to us right now. Yeah, if I go and say that to my parent, to my boss, to my friend, to my spouse, I have to risk blowing up that relationship. What's John Taffer talking about, confrontation? There's so much downsides to it.
Well, you're right, but that's the whole point of it is how do you engage with your boss and not lose your job? How do you engage with your boss? What are the systems of that? How do we engage in conflict? You know, if you're a Fox watcher and you're going to argue with the other side of the political spectrum, I suggest in a book, watch MSNBC for a while. Understand what the heck they're talking about so you can engage better. You have to understand your opponent. And if you do, whether it's a boss, whether it's a parent, whether it's a school system, there's ways to engage in conflict that is meaningful, not destructive.
Understood. I get that. Now, a couple of things that you do that I notice right away. So you'll do a nod. Mm-hmm. So you'll come up to me. I'm owning a restaurant, and you're trying to get through to me. And you'll say, listen, I think what you want to do. And you'll start nodding. Is that subconscious or is that a tactic?
Oh, it's purposeful. Also, when people are talking to me, I'll put my hand on my chin. I want people to think that what they say matters to me, that I respect them. And on that basis of respect and listening to them, I can engage in meaningful conflict. If I don't respect them or listen to them, it just becomes a screaming match, Brian, and we don't get anywhere. This is about being logical and being practical and understanding your opposition and strategically going at it to make a point.
Understood. So, for example, body language-wise, some people will lean against. So if I'm talking to you, I'll lean against the wall. I'll fold my hand. I'll listen to you. But if I back up and listen, people get the understanding that you are, as opposed to turning away and walking away. If you turn away or if your body language with your legs crossed or your hand behind your head, which means superiority, mm-hmm. do you get into some of that?
Absolutely. You know, I look at crossed arms. I look at body language. I look at tightening muscles. I mean, those are the signs to tell you you're not getting through. And if you're not getting through, the conflict is worthless. So you have to understand the other side. And we talk about so much of this in the book and the tool kits that we give. Help analyze that. You know, Brian, if I'm talking to you and you cross your arms and step back, there's no point anymore. You're not accepting what I'm saying. So I sort of blew it already. I need to pull you back in somehow, and I need to get your hand back on your chin and get you engaged with me. And great conflict happens when both sides are engaged.
What about repeating their point?
Well,
you repeat
their
point, and then you bring up your point. And don't use the word but, use it and.
I completely agree with that. Not only is that respectful, it's showing them that you listen to them. So you're saying this, you're saying that. Yep, I can understand how you feel that way. And I have a view that might, you know, have so I'm with you 100%. Acknowledging is part of respect.
Right. And the other thing is, as confident as you are, I think the more confident people know, the more they're willing to understand that maybe they need to know more. I think the smarter people are, the more they realize they have to know more. There's nothing wrong with maybe realizing you're wrong. And that comes out through confrontation.
It sure
people
does.
Have to be mature enough to admit it. Has that happened to you?
Absolutely. You know, there's a great story in a book we talk about with Roy and Walt Disney. When Walt Disney would have spent them at a house and home, they would have gone broke many, many years before they were successful. Roy controlled the checkbook, and they were making the movie Snow White, and we talk about this in the book, and there are some glitters, some defects in the film in the movie Snow White. And Walt goes to Roy and says, I need to fix this. It's $150,000. Roy wouldn't let him do it. And if you watch the Snow White movie to this day, you'll see that defect in the film. It was conflict that created the success of Disney. The conflict between Roy matching the dollars and Walt watching the creative. And it was the combination of both that made it successful.
Yeah, you know, we're going to we have something special prepared for you when you come on One Nation this weekend, because I know you're going to be on the channel.
Yeah.
Do it a little bit different. But I want to just play a cut from your new season of Bar Rescue. Let's listen.
Stop! You picked up that bacon with your bare hands, then put your hands all over this plate. You're going to kill somebody. You put gloves on your hand, go touch raw chicken, then touch every handle in this kitchen. What the hell are you guys doing?
How did that come out?
You know, that is not the kind of conflict I recommend in a book. As you know, Bar Rescue is a 30, 60-day process that I do in 4 days. And, you know, when I go to these bars, Brian, you know, they've been told their bars are terrible. They've been told their bars are dirty. Their employees have told them this for years. So I have to say it in a way that gets noticed. I only have 4 days to do it. So I get loud on purpose. Believe it or not, that's not anger. That's very deliberate. And it's me engaging in what I'll call high volume conflict to affect a change very, very quickly, because I don't have the time for 10 conversations.
Understood. And people should understand that. I mean, you don't want to give away your tricks, but there's ways that you get people candid. It's well thought out and very sophisticated. So that when people get, you get them in their real environment.
Yeah. Also, they have to understand your intention, Brian. You know, in Bar Rescue, I always get my hug in the end, right? So they understand when I'm screaming and yelling and ranting and raving that I'm well-intended. I'm trying to help them, not hurt them. So that's got to come through in conversations, too, that you care about the other side and you're well-intended.
You got to go do a TV hit. But, John, before you leave, there's a sense even in pro sports that coaches today do not coach like they used to. Even in the Army and in the military, the academies, they don't do the screaming. They don't. Yep. They don't go through the Paris Island like boot camp. Do you take that into account? That today, today's younger generation does not want that, and does that play into maybe what John Taffer was like in the 90s, as opposed to 2022?
No, you know, I believe that we still need to do those things. You know, coaches push athletes to be their best. They push them to exceed even their own expectations of performance. That doesn't happen if somebody isn't pushed. Either they push themselves like a Michael Jordan did, or they have a coach who pushes them. I'm all in favor of that style. It's funny, when Marshawn Lynch was on Bar Rescue, he told me what a great coach I would have been.
Yeah, I know. I saw you did that. Of course, the outstanding Raider and Buffalo Bill running back. And thanks so much, John. Best of luck. I'll talk to you during the week. Congratulations on the book. It is called The Power of Conflict. Pick it up and you'll be a better person, a better spouse, a better worker, and a better CEO. Thanks, John.
Thanks, buddy.
You got it. 1-866-408-7669. When we come back, I'll open up the phones, but I do want to expand on some of the breaking news that's coming across, and also welcome in Brett Baer, fresh off his stint on Fox News Sunday. This is The Brian Kilmeade Show.
Educating, entertaining, enlightening. You're with Brian Kilmeade. The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Would you be okay if Donald Trump were president, if he created this disinformation board, governance board, or if it is in place and he wins again in 2024, that he's in charge of such a thing?
I believe that this working group that gathers together best practices, makes sure that our work is coordinated, consistent with those best practices, that we're safeguarding the right of free speech, that we're safeguarding civil liberties, I think is an extraordinarily important endeavor.
That was a great question, and I can't believe it came from CNN, but because it's so astounding, some of the things that are happening right now, and they have to at one point in the lunchroom or at the sports bar say, maybe we were a little over the top, that everything we thought that Trump did was insidious and diabolical. And now they set up a disinformation bureau led by a woman that at the very least has a track record of not being able to pick up disinformation. Like, for example, the Hunter Biden laptop and the whole Russia hoax. Remember? So here is Devin Nunes on the timing of this and how it relates to Truth Social being the number one app. That's Donald Trump's app, which, by the way, I already have 22,000 followers. And Twitter being the third biggest app. And I've added 90,000 since Elon Musk has made the moves on the purchase. Cut 19.
I think that's a direct attack on what we are doing at True Social, because we can no longer be canceled. So now what do they have left to do? We're going to protect our users from this new phony government disinformation service. And the fact that they would use some D-rated TikTok star that is the queen of disinformation herself on the Russia hoax and the laptop from hell to head this up is really the height of hypocrisy that's so unbelievable. I've spent so much time in Washington, I don't think I've ever seen something so ridiculous.
And it just, I don't even know. It's so stupid. I almost wonder if it's a distraction from the border conversation. In the big picture, on the Musk situation, I thought Newt Gingrich really put it well with Maria on Sunday. Cut 21.
Well, I think it's another example of Elon Musk being unbelievably smarter than almost everybody else. He took everything pollsters and social analysts have been saying and political analysts and put it into a couple of very simple tweets or a couple of simple stick figures. Back in 2008, he was sort of a liberal, and the liberals were fairly close to the center. Then in 2012, he was beginning to be sort of in the center, and the liberals were going to the left. Now today, he finds himself to the right of center, and he finds the liberals have gone crazy. They're so far to the left. And meanwhile, the conservatives and his stick figures are about where they've always been.
Very well put. He actually did make stick figures and chose him where he is politically, center right. Uninteresting. That drove everyone crazy. Hey, when we come back, Brett Baer, fresh off his successful run on Fox News Sunday, we'll talk to him about what's breaking today. Don't move. You're listening to the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you did.
The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
I want the administration to understand that no deal is better than a bad deal. And a deal that only gives us 6 months from my perspective without dealing with some of the other elements, you know, it's 2022. It's not 2014. Some of the sunsets of the original deal, for all its imperfections, as you know, I didn't support the original deal, are even closer in terms of ending a pathway where Iran could ultimately achieve its goal. So from my perspective, unless there are other elements of the deal, that would not be a good deal. And, you know, and lifting of the IRGC designation as a terrorist organization, I think is also critically important not to take place. They need to keep the designation on it. That may be, in fact, one of the stumbling blocks of having a deal at the end of the day.
That's Senator Bob Menendez, a Democrat, obviously, who, and I remember Senator Schumer, Senator Cardin, Senator Menendez, knowing that it didn't really matter how they voted, whatever you want, but they did not go for the Iran deal. He's got conservative tendencies on international relations. And this Iran deal they're about to sign that's going to last 18 months, they said if it goes past February and they're still negotiating, it's really going to be a dead deal. We're in April. And I think to some degree the Russians are negotiating for us, which is nuts. Insanity. The Russians should be doing anything in the same vicinity of us or any nation. And then we're depending on them to cut a deal with Iran because we're not talking to Iran. We don't have diplomatic relations with Iran. Here's Brett Baer. That was what you brought on Senator Menendez on Fox News Sunday. Welcome back, by the way. Great job as usual.
Hey, Brian.
And you knew how he was going to answer, right? Because he was not for it 6 years ago. So
I had an idea, but I didn't know how he was now with the Biden administration. And what they were talking to him, I think he was pretty clear where he is.
I mean, but do you know anybody for this deal outside maybe a handful in the White House? And do you know if it's getting close?
They're still going. They're still negotiating. And I don't know anybody for the deal on Capitol Hill. Chris Murphy has said positive things, saying it's worth doing.
Yeah,
but there's very few.
Will it go to a vote?
No, it's not going to be a treaty. So, you know, they could do it on their own.
So they were trying to get a pledge from Secretary of State Blinken during the hearing saying, will you bring us this deal ahead of time? I'm going to do the best I can to find out if that would indeed be possible, which means no, pretty much.
Yeah, and they didn't get that. And so they're going to go forward, the administration, on its own. And it's going to be a lonely place, especially if the Iranians are ready to do stuff on missiles and other terrorist funding.
And that's what he brought up when it comes to ballistic missiles and intercontinental missiles. Nothing's there. The other thing, you know, there's no mystery, as you know, why Saudi Arabia is not taking the president's calls or Ant saying yes to can you pump more oil. It's because of this deal and our relations with them. And not looking at the Houthis as a terror, putting them on the terror watch list or listing them as a terrorist nation. This is all related.
It is. And so was the Houthis attack on the UAE. It was not treated with, they felt, the same level of respect or concern from the Biden administration. So there's a lot of love lost between the Saudis, UAE, and the Biden administration.
Absolutely. So yesterday also you had a chance to sit down and talk to Secretary Mayorkas. I think perhaps he was looking to do some damage control I thought, his horrific hearings, because he's got a terrible story to tell and he told it terribly. Here's a little of the exchange that you had on the naming of this new disinformation board and the person in charge.
Do you really think that Jankiewicz is anywhere near objective enough for this particular job?
Yes, I do. And by the way, highly regarded as a subject matter expert, and I don't question her objectivity. There are people in the department who have a diverse range of views, and they're incredibly dedicated to mission. We're not the opinion police. She has testified before Congress a number of times. She's recognized as a tremendous authority, and we're very fortunate to have her.
Well, the two things that stand out is the Russia hoax. She bought it. And number two is Hunter Biden, both Russian disinformation.
Right. And I asked about both those, Steele dossier and Hunter Biden. Listen, they're doing a cleanup on aisle four here, and they're calling it the working group now. You know, it's no longer the board or the governing board or the committee. It's the working group, which, you know, there is a group in the State Department that is about helping formulate information in other countries to prevent some terrorist act or something like that. There's already things like that. But this was not built like that, and Mayorkas conceded that he screwed up, they screwed up on the rollout, and I'd be surprised if this thing gets funded by line item of committee funding.
So, Brett, do you think that it's part of the background check to check TikTok? Because that little song that she had was playing everywhere, and it's so embarrassing to think that this person could be in charge of stopping the next Hunter Biden story.
Yeah. I think they're going to scale it back tremendously. I think it was, you know, I said last week that I thought it was the shiny thing. May have been. I don't know. But I do think that it's not going a lot of places. He took questions about it and will in the Senate as well. You know, I asked him about a number of things, and he said he was looking forward to his Senate hearing. And I said, really? Are you really?
So this week, I mean, this is going to be a big month for President Trump. If you look at May 17th, Idaho and Pennsylvania, he's endorsed a lot of candidates, many of which are not going to win. It doesn't look like David Perdue is even going to get enough in Georgia to force a runoff with Brian Kemp to get the nomination. J.D. Vance is another one since that could look good for the president. Took a guy that would maybe have been in third and put him first. Here's the president, though, kind of screwing up over the weekend. Cut eight.
By the way, 33-0 in Texas. I was 3 on endorsements, 33-0. And, you know, if I lost one race, they'd say Trump was humiliated. That's what they're waiting for. They're waiting for one race. You know, we've endorsed Dr. Oz. We've endorsed J.P., right? J.D. Mandel, and he's doing great. They're all doing good.
J.D. Vance.
That's a big problem. That's a big problem. If you are J.D. Vance or his campaign, and you're doing a closing argument, and your closing argument is that the former president of the United States has endorsed you, so you need to get on this bus, and yet he says, J.D. Mandel, the name of your closest opponent, and Mandel tweets out, thank you, Mr. President, for the endorsement. It's not good.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost, you know, they'd be killing Biden if he was doing this. So I think this, in my humble view, between the president being 75 years old and knows who, maybe there's some resistance at home, if he comes out, and I expect him to lose, and Brian Kemp, I think, deserves to win in Georgia. David Perdue's not a strong candidate. I don't know how many times he has to lose before we realize that. So then he get J.D. Vance, if Dr. Oz wins and J.D. Vance wins, and he gets some other key victories, I think that puts him on the path. But if some of these guys crater, and the Nebraska pick is not close, I mean, the guys, so there, if some of these crater, might that affect his decision? I mean, I you think so, right?
Yeah, listen, I think there's a lot of time about whether he's running or not running, and I've told you before, I'm in the camp that he's likely not going to run in the long term, even though all indications are the machine is running. I do think that the primary is a test of his juice politically. And he's right. Everybody's going to pay attention to every race. But he's got a couple, maybe 3-4, that are really on the edge of losing or losing big.
So a couple of things going on. Bret Baier getting set to host his show tonight. You'll see him all over the channel. ABC Washington Post comes out with a poll. 68% of respondents polled said they don't like how Joe Biden's handling inflation. They also say 7 of 10 voters disapprove of how he's handling the economy. They say 28% of respondents said they approve of Biden on inflation. So that is troublesome. And when you look at other things that he's losing on, where the Democratic Party is losing on, when it comes to the economy overall, 50% prefer the Republicans on the economy over Democrats. The Democrats also look better when it comes to social issues. And when it comes to the generic ballot on Congress, the Democrats moved up by a point or two. But clearly, there's a sense of, there seems to me, a sense of panic among Democrats.
I agree. President Biden is at a 46% approval in Massachusetts. That's all you need to say. And I think immigration is really hurting, not just in the border states, but across the country. I think inflation is the biggest hurt. So I think this article today, I think it was the Washington Post, saying that Biden advisors, political advisors, looking at Emmanuel Macron in France and how he played a poor approval rating election to run against the extreme side of Marine Le Pen's party, I think you're going to see a ton of talk about Donald Trump in the final months. And that's what's laying out before us. The January 6th committee is going to be all over, night and day. And they're taking a risk because I think a lot of Americans are more concerned about how much things cost and security and crime and other things. So, but that's the bet I think they're going to make.
I know. I see that story that they said they've tried over their pollsters warned about the problem with crime, negative, border, negative, inflation, negative. So they're going to go make everything contrast to with Donald Trump. The other problem is there's a lot of things that were going better under Donald Trump. And there, a lot of people didn't like him. But when you look at the border, when you look at inflation, when you look at the economy, when you look at the state of the world, when you look at the Abraham Accords, a lot of people are saying, well, wait a second. You know, what's going on here? So there, that might not be a comparison Republicans run from. The other thing to keep in mind, too, this reminds me a little bit of what Barack Obama did for his reelection. Remember, you know, the numbers were down. Of course, he was a great speaker. He's got a lot of charisma, but his numbers were down. People were tiring. And they decided to vilify Mitt Romney and make him the worst person ever, a horrible white person who didn't like poor people. And
think
that
about how quaint that is now. You know, a binder full of
women,
whatever, and the dog on the top of the roof. I mean, think about all the things that we're focused on.
Yeah, and now these are much bigger issues. Brett, I have not gotten a good answer for this, and don't blame yourself if you don't have a good answer. Why could George Allen's campaign, he came out and said, Vacocta, who's this guy following me around with this Vacocta camera? And that really hurt his chances of being president, but he lost to Webb because of that in that close Senate race to get six more years there. And now we're in a situation where people are making more Trump than anybody else, but making things that would have destroyed any other candidate or destroyed candidates in the past, and they just kind of walk through them. How do you explain what's changed?
Well, I think Trump changed it. You know, he definitely did. And think about all of that campaign and all the things that were said that were the last possible thing that a politician could do to get elected. I like people who weren't captured talking about John McCain, you know, all the stuff about the Access Hollywood tape. Think about what we've been through. So I don't know if the bar has been raised. It's definitely been raised for Donald Trump. But maybe it's been raised across the board for politicians, which is why you have some, you know, playing to the extreme. I do think much of the country is still in the same spot, though, center right, and in a place where that eventually is going to appeal to a large demographic.
You mean center right, like that Elon Musk sketched out?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, people are not buying the progressive woke stuff. And so that's a challenge for some Democrats.
And the last thing was for Republicans. They just talked about how the Republicans have changed. They used to be the party of big business. And now between the fights that they had in Georgia and then the latest one with Disney, they're kind of feeling comfortable walking away from big business. Does that muddle their message of free market enterprise? And
it does. It does. There was a win in Disney. I said this last week. You know, the Republicans down there and DeSantis could have walked away with a physical win politically. I think, you know, it's a wash if you start saying you're going after a business in one way or another, despite what they've done, you know. So it's a different message.
So I really believe, Brett, overall, we made America smarter in these 7 minutes we just spent together.
I think so. I mean, I really feel happy about it.
Right. That's good. I don't even think you have to go to work today. You've already accomplished
no,
a lot.
I'm done. I'm actually done.
No, do me a favor. I can't get a fill-in at the last minute. I do the schedule. So just do special report, and then I'll get you off tomorrow.
Okay. That sounds good. I'm in.
All right. Thanks, Brett. Appreciate it. The great Brett Baer. Great job yesterday on Fox News Sunday. 1-866-408-7669. We'll finish with a flurry of calls. Brian Kilmeade Show.
Learning something new every day on the Brian Kilmeade Show. He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Thank you, Steve, for that introduction. And a special thanks to the 42% of you actually applauded. I'm really excited to be here tonight with the only group of Americans with a lower approval rating than I have.
Well, yeah, I thought he was okay. I mean, he was better than I thought he would be. So it was a decent night. You know what I realized? That whole roast attitude really has no place there. And Barack Obama was the biggest culprit. And I also think that Seth Meyers was terrible. I mean, think about this. If Barack Obama doesn't focus on Donald Trump and Seth Meyers doesn't focus on Donald Trump, maybe he doesn't even run for president. To Donald Trump's credit, he never says, you know what, I'm going to show you. Remember, there's that all that other, and when he was called out and they tried to humiliate him at the Washington Correspondents' Dinner, he runs for president, gets the nomination, and becomes president. Number two, if you factor in that Donald Trump never hearkened back to that and said that was the reason that spurred him forward, there was another time that Jimmy Kimmel has you know, Jimmy Kimmel does this thing where you read mean tweets. And one of the things that Barack Obama did when he was there is read a mean tweet about him from Donald Trump. And to paraphrase, he said, well, that might be true, but at least I know one thing for sure, you'll never be president. Obviously, he became president. I just think the spirit was much more positive. The whole roasting thing of the president, you should do self. You do some things that make you look humble, and I think that works out for the better. Meanwhile, thanks to everybody who watched One Nation on Saturday. I'm going to look to build on that theme. It's the rise of the radically rational. Most people listening to me right now don't hate Democrats and don't hate Republicans. We understand some of the things that are going on right now, from opening up the border to teaching second graders to pick their gender, is insane. CRT makes no sense. 1619 was not when the nation was born. I think people are standing up and speaking out now, which guys like Bill Maher, Elon Musk, and Joe Rogan are leading the way. Their success speaks volumes. Thanks so much for everyone in Boston for pulling this off. See you tomorrow in New York.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
I'm Ben Domenech, Fox News contributor and editor of the Transom.com daily newsletter. And I'm inviting you to join a conversation every week. It's the Ben Domenech Podcast.
Subscribe and listen now by going to FoxNewsPodcasts.com. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.